The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
But first, as you will be hearing this morning, explosions have rocked parts of Lebanon and Syria, killing 9 people and wounding nearly 3,000 others. It's been called an unprecedented Hezbollah security breach after the organization's pagers detonated, killing some of their own fighters and injuring Iran's envoy to Beirut. Hezbollah are blaming Israel, and their leader Hassan Nasrallah is expected to make a televised address this afternoon. Joining me now to talk about these developments, Scott Lucas, Professor and Political Analyst at the Clinton Institute at University College Dublin. Scott, good morning.
Very good morning to you, Pat.
Now, I said in my introduction, this is like something from James Bond. Incredible. Explosive devices placed in pagers and then simultaneously detonated.
It's sort of James Bond when you describe that, the type of technology used. But Pat, what strikes me this morning is that next to that, it's the very real day-to-day that's involved, because you're talking probably up to around 5,000 pagers that could have been detonated. And they're being detonated not as you have like a group of Hezbollah people in a military compound. You know, there are Hezbollah members who are going about their business. They're in shops. They are in open public spaces in Beirut, in the Bekaa Valley in Lebanon. You know, they, in other words, are part of the community as well. So what you've got is this area where Israel, of course, if it ever claims responsibility, which it has not yet, it's going to frame this as, oh, this is part of our war against Hezbollah, who are fighting us across the Lebanese border. But, you know, these are civilian areas where these pagers went off. This could have been something that could have happened in any other big city in the world, because the technology is there to inflict casualties on a mass scale.
Now, the way this was done, I mean, the Taiwanese firm, whose name, it appears, has been located on the pager, says, didn't come from us. It was made by a European company. We gave them badging rights, but it wasn't us.
Yeah, what we know now, and I have to say what we know now, because there's a lot of claims that are flying around on social media, is that the Taiwanese company is called Gold Apollo. And Gold Apollo, you know, as we have developed, you know, the pager hardware that is used. But as with many companies around the world, you offshore the actual production. And the production was offshored to Hungary, to a country called BAC in Budapest. And there was this batch of phones, you know, that had obviously been ordered either directly or indirectly by Hezbollah for its use. They simply put out the shipment of phones, this mass shipment of phones. And as you had that introduction from one of your other guests, this is the key question. At what point in the supply and production chain did a state actor, and it has to be a state actor, get access to these phones to plant the explosives?
Now, the contention is that these were planted in part of the production process, which could be in the supply chain process, but equally it could be in the factory. So if it was done by BAC in Hungary, it would have to be have been at the say-so of the Hungarian government. So you have to tease out, what is the relationship between Hungary and Israel?
Well, I think you have to think about that, Pat, but you also have to think about something else that may have taken place, and that is, did these phones go directly from Hungary? Sorry, pagers. Did they go directly from Hungary to Lebanon, or did they go from Hungary via another location and then get passed on to Hezbollah? Now, I must emphasize, this is just a claim, and I want to be very careful here, but there is a claim circulating that the pagers went via Iran, and that Iran then supplied the pagers to Israel. Now, that if that is true, we know that Israel has penetrated Iranian security services, because Israel's carried out a series of attacks inside Iran, including killing the political head of Hamas on July 31st. So it could have happened in Hungary, but it could have happened in another location on the way to Lebanon.
The idea, though, of some factory workers, or I suppose experts in explosives, packing these little paging devices in some warehouse in Tehran or in any part of Iran, and not asking, where are these going? What are we doing? Why are we doing this? It kind of defies logic.
I suspect it would be someone who's working for the Israelis in Iran. If that were, and I have to just simply say that I have no evidence that this is what happened. But you have to remember, for example, that Israel in recent years has been able to carry out explosions inside Iranian nuclear sites. And one, you know, including probably their highest profile site at Natanz. That explosive was planted not by an Israeli. It was planted by an Iranian working for the Israelis. So this would have been a witting Iranian working with the Israelis to carry out this operation.
Now, the order placed by Hezbollah, who are, after all, the ruling party in Lebanon, this would be, if you like, a government order and known to be going to Hezbollah ultimately. That means that that order process had been already penetrated by Mossad, one presumes, on behalf of the Israelis.
Yeah. In other words, this would have been an operation that would have been developed for months, possibly even years, where you effectively are able to track the movement of items that go to Hezbollah. And as you quite rightly point out, it's not a simple, straightforward process of Hezbollah being a, quote, terrorist organization. Hezbollah has been part of the government in Lebanon, part of the coalition. Hezbollah members are MPs. They have been ministers. So they have their own military forces, of course, which are distinct from the Lebanese military. But you're in a very, very, as it were, mixed area that they interact with Lebanese agencies. And that causes a further issue here, which is, you know, Israel will say, oh, we attacked Hezbollah. But Lebanon will have to treat this as an attack on Lebanese institutions, as well as on the Lebanese people. And other countries in the region will have to treat this as an attack, not just on Hezbollah, but as an attack on a fellow Arab country.
So, the, you know, 2,000, 5,000, whatever the number might have been of those pagers that were intercepted and interfered with at some level, and we don't know precisely what the mechanism of these explosions, whether it's high explosive or whether it combines with what is probably a lithium battery within to maximize the localized damage caused by the exploding pager. There could be more out there sensitive to another instruction from this malign actor, ready to go off at any point.
Which is why the UN, for example, ordered all their staff immediately in Lebanon to disconnect their devices yesterday, completely disrupting their communications. And I suspect others within Lebanon, including state agencies, would have done the same thing. So this is not just an attack whose effect was to try to disrupt Hezbollah members. It's not just an attack which killed and injured civilians as well. It's an attack which disrupts communications throughout the country until you can establish exactly what the cause is and establish that other devices have not been penetrated by the Israelis.
Now, the Iranian ambassador who was injured, reported by his wife to be doing well, so not in any danger of losing his life. But if he's in possession of one of these pagers, it could be innocent enough. You know, everyone who's dealing with the government might be given a pager.
Sure.
Or it could be that as the Iranian envoy to Lebanon, he needs to be able to talk to the terrorist element of Hezbollah.
Well, first of all, we've got conflicting information on the extent of the injuries to the Iranian ambassador. So the New York Times, citing sources from Iran's Revolutionary Guards, say that he has lost one eye and is injured in the other. Iranian state outlets are denying that. Oh, no, he's absolutely fine. There's no need for him to be brought back to Tehran for treatment. You know, there is that story out there, but you get to the wider point here, and that is, you know, there are meetings in Beirut all the time between Iranian officials, both civilian and military, and Hezbollah. Hezbollah is not a puppet of Iran. I have to emphasize that. But Hezbollah is an ally of Iran, and Hezbollah is supported by Iran. So it makes sense that the Iranian ambassador, even if he's not in direct communication with Hezbollah officials, he would want to know, in other words, what his staff are doing. He'd want to know what they are discussing with Hezbollah. He'd want to know what Iranians who come out from Tehran, including the military, the Quds force, come out and discuss with Hezbollah. So, yeah, he's looped into the information network that links Tehran and Hezbollah, now, even if he's not directly speaking with them.
The reason they've all been using pagers, which is very old technology, kind of from the last century, really, is because they didn't trust that mobile phones could not be hacked. So this, presumably, the Israelis will be using this to drive people back to mobile phone use, which are more easily tracked, if not the content of messages, the location of those phones.
Or you absolutely disrupt, as we mentioned earlier, the ability to communicate by making people scared both of mobile phones and of pagers. which means you have to go, for example, to consider face-to-face meetings to take place. So this is an attack which has multiple levels here. But I think your point is a salient one, which is we focused in recent years through the ability to track mobile phones and the ability to carry out attacks either by finding out where someone is or by actually trying to, you know, mess around and cause, you know, those devices to injure whoever's carrying them. Now you have to look at pagers having been penetrated as well. What we're talking about here, Pat, is that although it hasn't received as much attention, quite rightly, as the killing of more than 41,000 people in Gaza since October 7th, we're talking about what is a full-spectrum conflict between Israel and Hezbollah. It's not an out-and-out direct war on the ground, but every other means is being used now by one side to cripple the other.
Finally, Scott, and briefly, what is likely to be the response from Hezbollah? Because they have insisted that the perpetrators will be punished for their sinful actions.
Yeah, they would say that, though. The leader of Hezbollah, Hassan Nasrallah, gives a speech at 2 p.m. our time, 5 p.m. In Beirut, and we'll see what signals he gives there. But I want to add something that hasn't been picked up yet. I think the Israelis were emboldened to do this in part because on July 31st, they carried out a significant attack, killing the leader, the political leader of Hamas in Tehran, you know, setting off an explosion in his apartment. The Iranians said for weeks they were going to retaliate, that they would make Israel pay for this. The Iranians either could not or have chosen not to retaliate at this point. And I think the Israelis have taken the space here and said, look, if they're not going to get us for killing Hamas political leader, let's test both Iran and Hezbollah and see how they'll respond to a mass attack on Hezbollah members.
Scott Lucas, professor and political analyst at the Clinton Institute at University College Dublin. Scott, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.